Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability with acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions.
Hello there, this is Josephine Lang, and I'm so glad that you've joined us this afternoon. And just listening to him, you wouldn't know this about Tony, but Tony can be very entertaining when he imitates his various British accents. And maybe, Tony, you would indulge us all with a small taste, perhaps, from Liverpool today.
Liverpool. I don't know if I can, Josephine. The thing about people from Liverpool is they talk in this really weird kind of way.
I thought that was pretty good.
You liked that, did you?
I did.
Okay. Anyway, we've got to get back to business here.
Yes.
So for anyone listening who's new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for 25 years. And during that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health problems. All of our radio shows are about developing psychic ability. And for this month of September, Josephine's going to be focusing on meditation. And today our topic is the benefits of meditation. So, Josephine, how would you like to begin tonight?
Thank you very much, Tony. Well, I always like to begin with gratitude to one of my main spiritual mentors, and her name was Jana Massey. And she would always begin her work in this same way and invited me to do it as well. And that's that I ask all of you to join in with me and to make spiritual agreement. And so that goes like this. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be for the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I agree.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you, everyone. So meditation, as you may know, has innumerable benefits. It lowers our heart rate. It helps us to find inner peace. It quiets the running commentary of our minds. And interestingly enough, meditation is the second most researched field of psychology. It didn't used to be the case, but now there are hundreds of scientific studies on meditation. And if you could, Tony, I would love it if you could just go to that first slide that we have today, which
certainly
begins with it's a wonderful quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, and this is one of my favorite beginning meditations and is actually the way that I did begin meditating. And it goes like this, and maybe you can all try it with me. Breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I smile. Isn't that nice? So go ahead and we'll do it one more time. Breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I smile. It's a lovely way to do a really quick little meditation wherever you are, you know, in the grocery store, driving the car, whatever. It just takes 1 second. And that's one of the things that I think about meditation is that it can be really simple and it doesn't have to be very complex. So I'd like to just go into, for a few moments, some of the wonderful benefits that we do get from meditation. Meditation increases our short and long-term memory. It increases our happiness and our sense of well-being. It also really improves our stress hardiness so that when we are exposed to stressful situations, we can handle them better. And it helps us to be more trusting in our lives. And that, of course, leads to, and it does, increase and give us better relationships. So that's a long, nice list of really wonderful benefits that we can get from meditation. Memory, happy, long and short term, happiness and well-being, stress hardiness, trusting, and better relationships. Then, in addition, meditation really increases our concentration and our perceptual clarity. And when we increase our ability to perceive, well, we increase our sensitivity and our empathy. And I think that's probably why meditation helps us to increase our relationships. And additionally, when we're increasing our perception and our sensitivity and our empathy, guess what we're doing? We're increasing our psychic ability as well. So, and then the way that psychologists look at this is that in this regard, the increased perception and sensitivity and empathy that can be considered a catalyst for psychological development. So what one of the things that meditation will do is it will help us to have upwellings of emotions or feelings. It kind of frees or clears the space for us to feel what we need to feel, to get in touch with whatever painful memories that might be lurking in our past. And then we can go ahead and work through them. And once we work through them, that helps us to heal our issues and our emotions. So a lot of times we'll stuff things down and we'll try not to look at them. But if we let ourselves take that time in meditation to open the window of our mind and to let our feelings well up within us, we can address them and then we can move on with our life. We've all heard of people getting stuck. Well, this is one of the great ways that you can unstuck yourself.
Mm.
Yeah. And then additionally, meditation lowers our blood pressure, lowers our cholesterol levels, and also lowers our glucose levels for those who tend towards high blood sugars. And Dean Ornish has meditation as his main tool to improve coronary artery disease. Isn't that something?
It really is, yeah.
Yeah. And Jon Kabat-Zinn uses it to control chronic pain. So that's, you know, it's really quite something. It helps us in so many ways. And then they've also found that long-term meditators have a younger physiological age. So it actually sort of decreases or slows down that aging rate. So many wonderful things that come to us from meditation.
Well, as you say that, Josephine, I'm thinking I should be due to start doing a lot of meditation.
Yeah,
I'm getting
yeah.
to that time in life, I think. I need to increase the amount of meditating I do.
Yeah, and then additionally, meditation is a little bit like, for me, what meditation does is it helps to open up that listening aspect of the self. And I think of it like, for instance, if you were to have suddenly heard the call of a bird outside and you said to your friend, did you hear that, you know? And you can listen for just a moment to see if you can hear that bird call. There's just a little window of opportunity there where we don't have any thoughts going on. And that's one of the things that meditation does, is it helps to open up a space in the mind to receive information from our higher self, which is, of course, that utilizes our intuitive function. So, yeah, meditation is wonderful. It, you know, reduces anxiety. It's been shown to help with addiction and depression and eating disorders. And it can really increase our cognitive function, our ability to think. And then, you know, there's even studies that have suggested that, like I mentioned earlier, just the reducing of blood pressure, the pain response, and stress hormone levels, which is really great. And then, as well, our cellular health in our body is also improved with meditation. So there's one other point about the health of the health benefits of meditation that I'd like to mention, which is the cells and neurons in the brain, and throughout the whole body for that matter. When we have a practice of meditation on a regular basis, we increase the production of new connections between our neurons, between our axons, and we have a greater, what they call neuroplasticity, a greater ability to use the cells and organs of our sensory perception. And then this, of course, affects how we respond to situations. So, and they find that when we have these neural circuits improved, that some areas of our brain will get thicker and some areas of our brain will get thinner. So it has an effect on how we respond and take in information. So it's really great for us. And so I've been having a practice of meditation now for, gosh, it must be, well, I think I started in the mid-80s. So that's a long time.
Yes. Well, is that nearly 30 years now?
I guess it is.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the math.
Math's one thing I can do.
So, you know, and like I kind of alluded to earlier, I have a very loose definition of meditation. I consider when somebody, you know, gets home from work and they go out on the front porch and they sit and they put their foot up and they maybe have a nice cold beverage beside them and they've got their dog sitting there on the rug, you know, and they're just giving themselves their time to be alone with their thoughts or musing on the day or watching the, you know, people walking by. That, to me, is meditation. And then, as well, just getting up and walking around the block. You know, whenever we give ourselves, free ourselves to be alone with our thoughts, we are entering into the realm of meditation. Now, of course, as we get further into the realm of meditation, we begin to learn how to control our thoughts as well and take a hold of them so that they don't just run away with our lives. But especially when we're, say, walking around the block, we're out in nature, we're in the great outdoors, and we just kind of tend to, our thoughts don't get such a stranglehold on us like they sometimes can. Our thoughts are a little more free to roam and move and a little more creative as we're walking. And then my dad, he used to go out to the garage and sort screws. He had cans of screws and nuts and bolts out there, and he usually had one big can that he was accumulating all of his washers and screws and bolts in, and he'd dump that out on his workbench table, and he'd stand there for a good hour or two, and I could always tell when he had some sort of big problem that he was wrestling with in his psychology, and he would go out there and just sit and just sort and stand and just sort through those things. And, you know, inspirations would come to him. And just like that happens for us, whenever we're doing something that's sort of meditative or repetitive like that, inspirations and ideas come to us. Good things that we'd like to do appear in our mind. We make that sort of higher self connection of stuff that we're inspired towards. And that is the psychic function. That, you know, our psychic ability is a byproduct of our spirituality. It is something that comes as a result of our inner listening and our ability to work on ourselves.
Well, that's a really interesting definition of the psychic function, because I think most people often imagine it's something like not necessarily listening to yourself, but getting an image or a perception of something that's happening outside of you or some distance away.
Yeah, but it also can, it very much, I think, is a part of what our higher self inspiration is. I think that is the function of our intuition. Is, and we know this about the subconscious mind, which is the source of all sensory input that we receive. So the subconscious mind tells us about our, you know, what's going on with our, it's taking charge of our heart rate and our breathing and the movement of our bowels. And it's also responsible for perceiving all information, including sorting out our visual perception or our auditory perception. And so all of these abilities to perceive are coming through the subconscious mind with our normal perception. But it's also our subconscious mind that's helping us to perceive information that's coming from our psychic function.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is, you know, making that connection within ourselves from the higher self to the subconscious mind to the conscious mind. And that, in a way, you could say, is how we get that, you know, psychic ability online, as it were.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that the more we spend, like in sort of like contemplative silence, you know, alone with ourselves, listening, you know, to ourselves or to whatever, the more that's going to help us develop our psychic abilities.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm saying. So now, Tony, if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to move on to the second slide. And this is a quote from Mike Love, who, you know, was one of the founding members of the Beach Boys with his family members.
Mm-hmm.
The Beach Boys musical group from the 70s, 60s and 70s, I think they were. And this slide says, during meditation, your metabolism and your breath rate go down to a level of rest twice that of deep sleep. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, very interesting. Mm.
Yeah. And, Tony, you were telling me yesterday about a number of stars and celebrities that meditate. Maybe you could comment a little bit on that.
Oh, let me see. Yeah, well, someone I know or met in, what was that? It was when I was in Boulder, Colorado. He'd written a book in which he had interviewed a number of famous sports personalities and other celebrities that meditated. And I was really surprised by the number of, you know, well-known people. I'm just going to see if I can try and remember some of the people that were willing to be interviewed that said, I think Richard Gere was one. I know there were, I was really shocked. There were a number of sports people, tennis players. It was really quite something, but I hesitate to say too many more names in case I get them wrong. But I was really taken aback. It seems that meditation is much more popular than we might think.
Yes, it has been gaining in popularity for some time now. And another thing that is a type of meditation that a lot of sports celebrities do that may not be recognized as meditation, but it is, and it's also a use of their psychic function as well, is they imagine themselves doing the course or jump, you know, if they're maybe riding horses, they see them clearing all the jumps beautifully. They see that with their mind's eye. They let themselves run the race in advance. They let themselves play the basketball game beforehand. They see themselves doing their moves perfectly, and that sets up and creates the pathway for them to follow in real life, in real time, when they go ahead and do their performance of their athletic ability.
Excellent. Josephine, we have a question from Greg, and he writes, I always get pains in my back when I sit cross-legged to meditate. It makes it very difficult to concentrate on stilling my mind. What do you recommend?
Yes. Well, I would say first thing, Greg, would be to, you know, sitting cross-legged is something that a lot of people do in meditation, and a lot of meditators really hold to that. I myself don't do that. I've had some compromised, you know, I've had some injuries to my knee that have compromised the quality of my knee, and so sitting cross-legged is not good for my knee. It stretches it out too much, and it heads me towards the road of, you know, some sort of need to rehabilitate that knee in the future. And so I'd rather not go there and do that. So I don't ever sit cross-legged, and I am a real firm believer in comfort above all. And so when it comes to meditation, I'm afraid I would not be a very strict teacher. So my very first suggestion for you would be to just try a chair or, you know, just sitting upright in a chair with a nice back that has good support for your legs, that's not too tall nor too short, and good support for your legs and back, and see if that doesn't bring you a little more comfort. And then you can also, you know, see if there's an idea where you can maybe put a pillow behind your low back or behind your upper back or something like that. Or you can let yourself relax and slump down from time to time. Tony is an Alexander instructor, and the Alexander work is wonderful for freeing chronic held pain in the body, places where we've been holding tight for so long that we get stiff and sore. And so that's exactly what you're experiencing when you're sitting cross-legged and you're experiencing pain in your back, is that there is some sort of holding pattern that is going on there that is preventing you from relaxing and from being comfortable. So I would say the first thing, first priority for me would be to just find a place where you're comfortable. And when I first began meditation, it was shortly before I had a major back injury. And I wanted to continue my meditation practice after I had received this big injury, and I was not at all comfortable sitting at any time for any length of time for quite some, I think it was more than a year. And so I did all of my meditating laying down. Now, if you haven't gotten a good night's sleep, that's kind of tough because you can get a little sleepy, but I get started usually first thing in the morning with my meditation. I'll sometimes begin my meditation before I even get out of bed. Actually, what I usually do is, first of all, I'll do my dream work, dream interpretation, and then I'll usually visit the restroom, and then I'll do a little meditation right after that. And when we wake up and we're nice and refreshed, it's a great time for us to do our meditation. So that's what I would recommend, is that you find yourself in a comfortable place and do it at a time when it is comfortable for you to do it. And then sometimes that means we have to get to bed earlier if we're going to do something like that, so that we can awake refreshed a little early enough to allow that extra bit of time for meditation, however long it is. Could be just 5 minutes, could be 3, could be 30, could be an hour, whatever makes you feel right. And then as well, when I was doing those early meditations, when I was lying on my back, I liked to grab a piece of sodalite stone. And I found a nice one in this wonderful rock shop that used to be in San Luis Obispo, Dad's Rock Shop. It was a great place to go. And I got a nice little sort of hunk of sodalite, slightly triangular shape. It had one flat side to it. And I would lay down and I would place that sodalite stone on my third eye, or right between my two eyes, just slightly above, between my eyebrows where they meet and my forehead. And I let that sodalite stone, knowing that what it was good for was for increasing your clairvoyance, I let that increase my vision center, so my capacity or my activity in my vision center. And, you know, who knows, who cares if the stones actually really do? It's not really important. What's important is that my intention was directed towards that. With the stone on my forehead, I thought, ah, I'm going to increase my vision center. I'm going to increase the capacity there. And so indeed, I did. So as I would lie there and meditate, because oftentimes I like to do visualization-type meditations as well, I would let myself go ahead and receive visions and inspirations and ideas that would come in the form of pictures in my inner eye, pictures in my mind, rather like using our imagination. And so that's what I would recommend, is get comfortable, do what your body needs you to do. You know, I can be a bit of a wiggler in meditation. If I have a mosquito, you know, I'll swish it away, or if I have an itch, I'll scratch it. So I'm sure I would not be appreciated in some of the more advanced meditation halls. But I do find that it is less distracting for me to just take care of my body needs and take care of myself and just work with it that way. So, you know, there's many ways to do a thing, you know, what you're setting out to do, and that's just my way. So that's what I'd recommend, Greg.
Well, that reminds me of a story. Many years ago, my friend Sonu went to a free Zen meditation that was happening in London, and when he came back, I asked him how it went, and he said, well, not so good. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, after the third time, he slapped me with this large wooden paddle around the back of the head. I thought, this is too painful for me, and I'm leaving. Have you ever heard of that kind of meditation?
I actually have heard of very strict meditations where you need to, you know, sit and not move at all, and you get in trouble if you do.
Mm-hmm. But well, that wouldn't work for me.
Nor me. But it does work really well for other people, you know, so I fully embrace whatever does work for you. You know, some people are just too fidgety and they just would never get to it, and they would never get to calming that mind unless they absolutely disciplined their body into stillness. Mm-hmm. So everybody is different, and I honor that. But, you know, this question reminds me a little bit of the next slide, Tony. Maybe you could put that slide on for us.
I will, and we have had another question come in, which is very similar to that one, or on a similar theme.
Okay.
So perhaps after this slide, I'll
that sounds great.
Get to that one.
So this slide is a quote by Swami Sivananda. And the quote is, meditation is painful in the beginning, but it bestows immortal bliss and supreme joy in the end. And boy, I sure do find that to be true in my own life. It wasn't so much painful for me because, like I said, I really believe in comfort. But there, it sort of felt like a chore at the very start, and I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to go meditate. But then I grew to really love it, and I find that it really has brought me supreme joy. It's the way that I get my answers. It's the way that I do my work as a medical intuitive, as a clairvoyant healer. I sit in receptive silence, and I clear myself with a meditation before I begin. And then I just sit and await images to come and arise for me on the other person's behalf. So I put my left hand, the receiving hand, on their name and address, and then images just start to flow. So it has brought me my supreme joy, because it's through the act of meditation that I am able to engage my clairvoyance and allow myself to do what I do professionally.
Oh, excellent. Perhaps I should ask you this other question that's just come in. This is from Michelle from Cambria in California.
Oh, how nice.
And she writes, how long should one meditate and how frequently? Should we force ourselves or just let it come to us?
Well, there we go.
I think you've just spoken to that.
Yes, and thank you very much, Michelle, for that question. That's, you know, something that I really had to take the time with at the beginning of my meditation practice to see what worked for me. And what I decided for myself was I really wanted to take up a practice of meditation when I was just beginning, and so I decided that the frequency had to be at least once a day, because that way then I really felt like I was doing it. Now, sometimes when I'm taking vitamins or supplements or something, you know, I'll take them. If I have something that I need to take for some reason or another, I feel a calling for it, I'll take it 6 days a week and give myself a break on Sunday, just because I like to let the body rise up to meet that need on its own. So that might be a thing that you might decide. You might decide, well, I'll meditate from, you know, Monday through Saturday, and then on Sunday I'll give myself a rest, or vice versa, you know, meditate through the weekend and give a rest on Monday or something like that. But I think that that is very arbitrary, how frequent. And then I also think that how long is also quite arbitrary. Now, back to the frequency, though. If, you know, it's like if you want to learn how to become a really good tennis player, well, if you play tennis once a month, you know, you're going to probably get it in a few years, how to play the game pretty well, maybe. But if you played it twice a week, you'd get considerably better. And if you played it every day, you'd get really good. And when we were growing up, one of Frank's sisters was a modern dancer. And she used to dance for 8 hours a day some days, many days a week. And it was just astounding to me how much time she could put in dancing. But she was a professional. She was traveling with a professional company. And, you know, she was really, really, really good at it because she really put in the time. So it kind of depends on how much of a fast track you want to get on with it, how soon do you want to get all of these wonderful benefits. So that also brings us to how long. So if you meditate for 1 minute a day, that's not quite as much as dancing for 8 hours a day. So, but it will count in my book as a practice, just so you know. And so I like to go for what I think is a really nice beginning amount of time, because sometimes it takes us a while to establish the habit and get over the thoughts that it's a chore. So for beginners, I'm okay with 5 minutes once a day or mm-hmm. 6 days a week, something like that.
And that sounds manageable.
It's very manageable. It's very easy to do, and it doesn't sound like such a heavy-duty thing. And also, it's enough to give you a taste of those wonderful benefits, so you begin to see, ooh, you know what? This is not a chore. I like this. This is actually quite nice. So that's the other part of it. And then when we're doing just a small little taste like that, then we don't really feel so much like we have to force ourselves to do it. Like when, you know, at one point I decided, this was years and years ago, I'm going to meditate for an hour every day, you know, and I knuckled down and was disciplined with myself, and I sat myself down and really got at it. And, you know, it just didn't work. It just felt too much of a push. But that's the kind of person that I am. Somebody else may very much need that. They may very much need that discipline to really get a hold of themselves, especially if we've got a really bad, you know, monkey mind going on where it's just all over the place and out of control. Then I would say, yes, definitely the more traditional forms of meditation would be of great benefit. So it just really depends, you know, we're all different, and there are many different roads to God or to the divine. And so you can kind of take your pick and feel your way in according to who you are. And then, yeah, I would say let it come. Let it come to you, what is right to you, and take it from there.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you, Josephine.
Sure.
If anyone listening would like to speak with Josephine, ask a question, make a comment, then do please dial 1-206-402-0100, and then dial the PIN number, which is 677-086-POUND. I'll give that number again. It's 1-206-402-0100, then dial the PIN number, which is 677-086-POUND. And I can see that we have a number of people who are listening on the phone. If any of you would like to speak to Josephine or ask a question, share a comment, then you just dial *2, and that will let us know that you want to speak. Okay. We have another question come in via email, and this one is from Laura in Santa Monica, and she writes, "I'd love to meditate, but I always get so sleepy, so I don't do it very often. Do other people experience this problem?"
Yes, Laura, lots of people do. And that happens, I think, especially if you try to do your meditation at the end of a long, hard day. You sit down to meditate, and before you know it, you're sleeping. And it's probably the best thing, because you probably really do need to sleep. And sleeping is a wonderful way for us to refresh and rejuvenate ourselves, which is what meditation does. It refreshes and rejuvenates us. So in your situation, Laura, I would recommend, again, meditating in the morning or during the middle of the day or at some point in time when you're not liable to fall asleep. So in other words, not immediately after a nice big meal when we get a little nappy. You know, the siesta time. 2 to 4, probably not the best time to try to meditate then. But for some, it would be fine, you know. So just find a time when you're naturally kind of awake. Like it might be maybe 2 hours after breakfast or something, where you're kind of up and busy and going on your day. Or it could be like I do first thing in the morning. That way you won't get so sleepy, and you'll be more inclined to be able to meditate. Now, for people who do have chronic sleep problems, it's really hard to find a time at any time to meditate, because that chronic sleep pattern problem might need to get cleared up first. So then I would recommend for somebody in that situation to go ahead and clear all the caffeine out of their life, first thing, and second thing, clear all the sugar out of their life. That's just going to help immensely with helping you to not be, you know, constantly pushing your adrenal glands and your, you know, your entire hormonal system to perform more than it can and should do, and it will allow you to begin to get some better quality sleep and rest. And then also I would probably recommend a colon cleanse, just because a lot of times when our colons are congested or if we suffer from constipation, then our blood is not so clean, and then when we have dirty blood, we wind up with thoughts that are not as clean as they could be, and muddled thinking, and a tendency towards sleepiness or drowsiness. So all of those can really help with clearing up a sleep problem or a sleepiness problem with meditation.
Thank you so much, Josephine. We now have, since that announcement that I made, some people that would like to speak with you.
Great.
I don't have the name of our first caller, but he or she is from, I believe, Batesburg, South Carolina. So, caller, you're on the line.
Hi. Hello. My name is Crystal.
Hi, Crystal. Thanks for calling.
Oh, no. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity. I, you have clarified a lot of things for me. I have been trying to be serious about meditating for some time, and like the other internet question about back pain, I too have had trouble sitting up with the legs crossed and all. So and I always wonder, oh, am I doing it right, or am I not going to get the full benefit? So thank you for confirming that part about that. And also the time of which to do so and all. I find myself waking up about 3 in the morning every night here recently, and I just take that opportunity to do my breathing. And I'm still working on my intuitive part, so I guess I just need to stay focused and keep doing what I'm doing.
Absolutely, Crystal. And I'm so glad to hear that you do your breathing exercises at 3 in the morning when you wake up. That's a wonderful time for us to do breathing exercises. Interestingly enough, there is, you know, there are some very spiritually advanced people who have really cleaned themselves to a very high level of consciousness and being. And some of them are fruitarians, and they live only on fruit. And a lot of these people do really strong really strong spiritual practices as well, like meditation or dream interpretation or hermitages, that sort of thing. And then as well, there are people who are known as breatharians. And the breatharians primarily live on just their own breath. They might also do sun gazing, which is something for a very advanced person who has really worked on themselves and has learned a lot about that. I wouldn't recommend anybody jumping into that without researching it. But they consider that 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. breath to be the most nutritive air quality, because the plants have done their photosynthesis all day long and they are in a resting state, and most everybody is in deep sleep time, and so there's not a lot of confusion of minds with a lot of ideas going on. Everybody's sort of in their sleep state, and so those breatharians will get out there and breathe at 3 in the morning. And, you know, breathing is a wonderful practice, so I'm so glad to hear that you're doing it. And it is also considered a breathing practice, in my book, a form of meditation. So when you are focusing on your breath, you know, you're taking your time to really feel the measure and timing of your inhalation and of your exhalation. And that is allowing you to set your busy mind aside to focus on the breath. And that allows us to begin to control our thoughts and to start to let them step aside a little bit. And then, of course, you're just one step away from the psychic function, which is once those thoughts are beginning to follow our direction instead of directing us, then we can say, let me have a little space here to see what my inspirations from my higher self are, or from what the deep needs of my subconscious mind might be, so that I can begin to get myself unified on one plane so that I can stand in my true power and move ahead into my full psychic function.
Okay, so during that time, any thoughts that come to mind are, I guess, messages from my higher self telling me things I need to know?
Yeah, they can be from the higher self, or they can also be from the subconscious mind, which can be previous programming that we've received, and it can be good or bad, so we just kind of want to pay attention to the thoughts that come, notice them, let them go. What we're doing when we're doing our breathing practice, which is the meditation, is we're just gaining the experience of controlling our mind and controlling our thoughts. So, yes, absolutely. If you have a thought arise while you're doing your breathing exercise, just make a mental note of it and then go back into the measured breath and breathing. And then later, you know, perhaps the next day, you've got your mental note, you remember, oh, what was that thought that I had? Now, what do I think about that? Was that an inspiration that came to me, that was something that will help to bring good to others in the world? Or was that a fear-based thought that I maybe picked up when I was 7 or 8, you know, and I don't need that anymore in my life? And I can just say to myself, oh, thank you for sharing. Yeah, that was something that served me really well back then. But you know what? It doesn't serve me anymore, so I'm going to let that one go. And I'm going to replace it with a different type of thought, which is something like, you know, all is well in my world, and everything is working itself out for my highest good, and I trust myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've given you quite a lot to think about, Crystal, there.
You have, and I certainly will do so. Now, do you see, I guess, anything health issue-wise that I might need to... Hold on, please. Or do you... I don't know if you do that type of thing or not.
I do, but I do it through appointment only. And the way to do that would be to just go to my website, which is www.stepintomagic.com, and go ahead and contact me there. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome, Crystal. Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was wonderful, Josephine. We have another caller, this one from Seattle, and you're on the line.
Yes, hello.
Hi,
hi, Josephine.
How are you today?
I'm wonderful, thank you very much.
Good. And what's your name?
I have to apologize. I missed the first 20 minutes of the call, and I'm a little bit... I'm just starting, you know, to really go enjoy meditating.
Right.
But how I've been doing it is, you know, the 5 minutes in the morning when I'm just in that delicious state, and then also at nighttime just right before I go to bed. But I
Perfect.
And so I do that, and I'm also like this other caller where I am waking up every morning at 4:13 or 4:33. Something like that, but I don't meditate. I ask questions. But what I really wanted to ask you is, and this may have already, you may have already mentioned this before,
mm-hmm.
but there are certain activities that I do. One of them is washing dishes, which I absolutely love to do.
Right.
And I do it in front of my window because my kitchen window, because I have a bird feeder. I can watch all the animals. And I tend to go into an altered state of consciousness. And so for me, I think of that as meditation.
Absolutely.
And so I just, you know, a lot of times I go, God, I'm not having like the spiritual type of thing. So, you know, I'm trying to get away from comparing that way. But I have lots of activities that I just do that with. And it's always, you know, either not vacuuming, but like cleaning, playing in the yard with the plants. And
wonderful.
I just go into that. And people will say to me, I can't believe you love washing dishes. And I go, oh, my God, but if you only knew why.
Isn't that beautiful? Oh,
yeah.
Thank you so much for bringing that and sharing that on the program, because I really do feel that that is absolutely meditation. And in a way, it could almost be that third form of prayer, that really high form of prayer where we enter into silent union with the divine, where we lose all sense of ourself and we just become one with everything. And it sounds to me like you are almost having that kind of a high spiritual experience while you're doing your house chores, which is so wonderful. You should feel really good about that.
I do. I just, you know, but I hear so much. And the other thing that while this is also occurring is that I go into, I kind of like have little, just not, I wouldn't say traumatic, but like lifting of veils. And I, you know, I want to live by the beach. That's one of my goals. And I smell the ocean. And of course, I'm in Seattle, so I can smell the sound. But this is different. I hear the waves. I do all that. So it's just like I can't wait to do dishes.
That is so great. That is so great. And, you know, in a way, that sounds to me very much like a sort of a psychic flash or a psychic insight or
okay.
a prompting from your higher self that, you know, there you are and you're hearing the waves and you're smelling the ocean. It's calling to you. You are communing with the ocean in those moments. You're actually
wonderful.
Reaching across. A part of you is reaching to the ocean and connecting with it on a very deep level. And that's what our psychic ability is all about, is helping us to really understand the deep interconnectedness of everything.
Oh, you're giving me goosebumps.
Oh, there we go. So now that's what I call my truth detector.
Oh, okay.
We get the goosebumps, that chilly skin response. That means we are in truth. We're really hit the nail on the head, as it were.
Okay.
So,
and the breathing, I just wanted to say,
yes.
The breathing, what type of breathing? Is it the deep, diaphragmatic breathing, or, because I missed that part.
Yes, well, we're actually going to get into that tomorrow, in next Thursday's show.
Okay.
So be sure to tune in for that. And what's your name, please?
My name is Asuncion, but everybody calls me Susie.
Oh, how great. Asuncion.
Yes,
well, thank you so much for calling today.
And thank you for taking my call. Thank you very much.
Sure, you're very welcome. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
So, Josephine, would you like another question, or should we move on to the next slide?
Let's go ahead and move on to that next slide, Tony, first, and then we'll do a question after that. How about that?
Sounds wonderful.
So this next slide is by Dr. Hetty Kober. And the slide says, meditation did to my mind what going to the gym did to my body. It made me both stronger and more flexible. And, you know, meditation does give us higher levels of self-acceptance. When we learn how to control the thoughts in our minds, begin to start to do that, we can clear ourselves from both craving and aversion, which is what the Buddha said created suffering in the life. So meditation gives us that mental control for psychological and physical well-being, and it lets us begin to control our out-of-control minds. And before I go on to that next question, I'd like to just speak just a moment about a really wonderful beginning meditation that I'd love for everyone to experiment with this week if you get a chance. And I call it the train meditation. And, you know, I used to have a horse, and I love riding, and I loved my horse. She was just wonderful. I had her for 30 years or something, maybe more than that, 35 years I think it was. And it's sort of like picking up the reins. It's just a very gentle, we are engaging. And now we're going to unify our minds. We're going to, you know, find that way to stop that, you know, constant wild thoughts that are just carrying us left and right and all over the place, you know, as if the horse was running wild without any control. And when you pick up the reins, you're like, no, we're going to go in this direction. And it lets our heart begin to rise up and lead our mind. So the train meditation is like, let's pretend that you were sitting in traffic and a train was just going to cross by. And so the little arms of the train thing reach down across the roadway to let us know that the train is coming. And then you're just sitting there and you're just relaxed and a very slow moving train starts to pass in front of your vision. And we're just imagining this right now. So there goes the train. There goes the locomotive. And it's just now gone by. And then here comes the first car of the train. And now it has just gone by. And then the second car of the train goes by. And maybe there's 30 or 40 cars. And the idea for this meditation is to go ahead and think a thought, but let it go. And so, like, you have that one or two, you know, maybe a second to think that thought. And then the only rule is you can think another thought, but it just has to be a different one. And so then you let yourself think that next thought for just a moment and then change and let it be a different one. And then you might repeat an earlier thought if it's a particularly persistent thought, but you can't do it back to back. No two thoughts are the same in this train of thoughts that are going by. So you can notice which thoughts you tend to recur to, which thoughts you tend to revisit again and again. That's something that is trying to get your attention to work on. We were talking earlier about how things can percolate up in our psychology. And there are things that we need to address, things, emotions that we need to feel or need to take action about. And so we just notice which things are being persistent in this train meditation. And then after I've finished the meditation, I'll usually make a little note about what I need to tend to. But the idea here is that we watch our thoughts and let them go. See what the next thought is that arises and let it go. And pretty soon, before we know it in this trained meditation, there might be one or two times where we're thinking, well, I don't know what to think next. That's kind of a good moment. It's like, all right, there's a little opening right there. How nice. That might be one of those flatbed cars where there's nothing on there. Yeah, so let's go ahead and go on to the next caller then, Tony.
Okay, well, we have a comment more rather than a question from Tom.
Okay, great.
Morro Bay in California, and he writes to us, when I meditate, I feel full of love for everyone and everything. It's beautiful. Thank you for encouraging others to try and to embrace this wonderful practice in their lives.
Oh, that's so great, Tom. Thank you so much for writing that in. I really appreciate that, and I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I think that that's part of what we're trying to do when we meditate. Another meditation that I do, and I don't ever really recommend that anybody meditate while they drive because you're operating machinery and it's not a good idea. But I have done walking meditations and open-eyed meditations for so many years that I've grown quite comfortable with it. So one of the things that I like to do when I am driving in the car is I'll just allow myself to notice the other drivers. I'm not staring at them. I'm just quickly noticing them. And then I'll just think how dear they are, how wonderful, how earnest and sincere. Sometimes the different faces or the different types of cars will tip me off as to what kind of personality they might have and what they're trying to accomplish in their life. And everything is beautiful. We're all trying our very best. And so I just let myself see and notice what's the very best in them as they go along. And your comment, Tom, about feeling full of love for everyone and everything reminds me a little bit of that. And that certainly is one of the huge benefits that comes from meditation, is just allowing ourselves to enter into that overwhelming almost flow of love, divine love that comes through for us. And that was one of the things that was so beautiful about Asuncion's call, about her standing at the window washing her dishes and going into that altered state. We do really enter into the flow of everything when that happens. And so thank you, Tom, very much for your beautiful call, or your beautiful comments. I really appreciate it.
So, Josephine, where would you like to go now? Would you like another question or the next slide?
Well, why don't we do another question, and then we'll go on to the next
slide. Okay. The next question is from Angela from Culver City, and she writes, I've heard of the silver cord when we sleep. Does that ever come into play while in meditation?
Ah, yes, indeed it does. So when I was early on in my practice of meditation, I would often meditate at the end of the day before bed, before I was sleeping, like maybe an hour or two before bed. And often my darling husband, Frank, would, you know, have a television program that he might be interested in watching or a book that he was reading. And I would just say, you know, I think I'm going to go back in the back and meditate a little bit in my little sanctuary, which was the spare room that we were able to set up for me so that I could do my healing at that time. And by this point, I was beginning to be able to sit comfortably in meditation, and this was before that knee injury that I had, so I could even sit cross-legged. And so I would sit on top of the massage table that we have back here in this spare room, and I had put a mirror above my altar in that room. And my altar has got some, you know, candles for the four directions and some lovely spiritual figures, Mother Mary and Saint Francis and the Buddha and some horses, of course, because I love horses so much. And then I would sit there and light the candles on my altar and call in the four directions to sort of center and ground myself. And then I would gaze into my eyes in the mirror and sort of let myself use my soft focus and kind of almost lose the image of my own face. And just see the light in my eyes, or the light that was in the room, and just allow that to sort of carry me. And sometimes it's quite amazing what can happen when we really give ourselves over to a depth of meditation. And this happened to me on a number of occasions, where I would just go into that state and just allow myself to just travel with the meditation. And it was a very neutral feeling, and there were no thoughts or very few thoughts. if any at all. And I would just sort of imagine myself floating out into the universe. And I liked to do this meditation because it just felt so comfortable and wonderful. And, you know, we've all seen pictures of deep space with the spiral nebulas and the floating gases and things. Now, I'm sure those would be very toxic environments to try to be in and would not sustain life. But we can use our imagination and visit them from the comfort of our own, you know, living rooms or whatever, where the air quality is beautiful and we're comfortable and happy. And so that's what I would do in some of those meditations. And when I would travel out into the deep space like that in my mind's eye and just in that deep relaxation, I would have a sense of, you know, we see the astronauts when they leave the ship, they have like a little cord that connects them to the spaceship. It was just like that, that there was this little sense of a silver cord, an etheric line that would go all the way back down to Earth, to my little spot on the planet. And that was the, you know, the connection, that was my connection that was sort of holding me there. And I'm sure that there were times that my eyes would close while I was doing that meditation because I was so deep out into that sense of the universe. But I also felt very connected because of that little silver cord there. So, Angela, this is a really interesting and good question that you've asked. And yes, we do, I understand, have that same silver cord when we sleep. That's what sort of holds us, and that it's at the time of our death that that cord finally lets go. And a dear friend of mine, who was a psychic in nature, when she passed away, she made a connection after she had passed with another mutual friend of ours, and she said that she died, it was from the flu, surprisingly enough. You know, we hear about people who die all the time from the flu. You know, 250,000 people die, you know, every year or whatever from the flu, or however much it is, I really don't know. But you never often hear of that much about people. Well, she was one of the folks who died from the flu, and she came back and connected with another good friend of ours, a mutual friend who was additionally also psychic. And she said that when she was out, you know, she just went into this deep sleep. She had the flu. She was, you know, sleeping. She died in her sleep. And she said she just went so far out that it just felt so, so lovely that she just let that cord thin and disappear. And then she was contented to not come back and just moved on into her journey of spirit on the other side of life. And so I think it is that silver cord that connects us and holds us, not only while we're asleep, but also when we're in that state of deep meditation. And it's that silver cord that we let go of when we make our journey, our full transition into spirit. And then as well, I've heard of trackers, people who do animal tracking. A wonderful film that Frank and I saw not too long ago this year by John Brown, it wasn't by John Brown, but John Brown appeared in it. And it was about trackers from around the world, people who were looking for animals, generally for hunting or for other purposes. And they talk about seeing a silver or misty cord between them and the animal. And what has gone on there is that these are cultures where they're very connected with everything around them. And that animal, they need an animal for helping to feed their family or their tribe. And so they seek out in their mind's eye for an animal that is willing to give itself. And then that animal will present that silver cord between themselves and the tracker so that the tracker can follow that silver cord right to the animal. And this is an experience that John Brown came in with. So he is able to do this type of tracking with the silver cord. And so there's more to it than just the thought about sleep, which we've heard of, or the thought about the passing on, which we've heard of, and also what you've asked about, Angela, this very, prescient question about meditation. I think that we do have a silver cord and that it is something that we can, you know, see palpably with our third eye if we practice it and develop it. So I was kind of surprised when it appeared to me in my meditations in the deep space there, but I was also very comforted by it. I knew that there was a rightness to it. So that, I hope, has answered your question.
Thank you very much, Josephine. I see we're getting quite near the end. Shall we...
We do have one more slide, don't we, Tony?
We do indeed.
All right. Well, let's... or maybe we have two, I think.
Oh, we have...
let's go, first of all, to Ringo Starr's slide.
Okay.
I love this little quote from Ringo. And it says, at the end of the day, I can end up just totally wacky because I've made mountains out of molehills. With meditation, I can keep them as molehills. And it occurs to me that since we started the show with your Liverpoolian accent, that maybe you should read that slide once more.
I did.
All right, then.
Maybe next time. Okay. I mean, I am trying to free up my inhibitions. I mean, it's twice in one show?
Yeah.
No.
All right, then. Well, then let's go ahead and move on to our last slide, which is from the Dalai Lama. And this ties in with a couple of the questions that we had earlier, which is, sleep is the best meditation. And I think that's so profound. You know, when we are sleeping, we are really setting our conscious mind aside completely. The conscious mind is the one that's constantly jumping all over the place and thinking, I should do this, I should worry about that, or, you know, all of that little monkey mind, as they call it. And when we're asleep, ta-da, the conscious mind takes a vacation. And it's just our thoughts from our higher self and from our subconscious mind communing and reaching us on various levels of our being. So that's a wonderful quote from the Dalai Lama.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a really nice way to move towards the end of the show.
Yes.
That's really all the time we have for comments and questions for this week. So if anyone out there would like to ask a question or share a comment about today's program, you can type it into the box on the left of your screen, or you could go to Josephine's website at stepintomagic.com and just go to the contact page, and you can type in your question there, because we will be staying with this topic of meditation for the whole of September. The link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website. Again, just go to stepintomagic.com and click on radio. And so before we close, Josephine, are there any parting words that you'd like to say?
Yes, there are. I think that meditation has been one of the greatest blessings in my life. I consider it to be one of the four cornerstones for developing our psychic ability, and it also helps us to create a self-actualized life. I look at meditation not as one more chore that I have to do, but as a refreshment, a time away from the hustle and bustle of life that gives me a little rest and lets me find myself once more. So I'd like to thank all of you for the gift of your time, and it warms my heart so to know that you're listening. And I always like to close my work with this little blessing, just like my mentor Jana did with hers. And it goes like this. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love, and we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned, and so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a pleasure talking with you and being your co-host on this show. I trust that everyone listening found something valuable, both about psychic ability, developing psychic ability and meditation. This has been show number M1-9. And just before we go, I'd like to remind everyone that Josephine will be giving a talk at the Coalesce Bookstore in Morro Bay in California on the Central Coast on September the 22nd. It starts 1 o'clock, finishes at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.